Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, December 21st. Excited to enter our second century. Midland Chamber commences 100th anniversary celebrations. Business and community members gathered Monday evening at the Midland Chamber of Commerce's centennial kickoff soiree to celebrate its upcoming 100th anniversary and begin a year-long commemoration of its accomplishments. Quote, "We wanted to launch into our 100th year looking back at highlights of the Chamber's many accomplishments over the last century," said Bobby Burns, who will retire as president and CEO on December 31st. Quote, "This chamber, your chamber, has left its mark on nearly every aspect of Midland life," end quote. The Midland Chamber was founded in January of 1924. Examples of initiatives created by or with the assistance of the Chamber, according to a news release from the Midland Chamber of Commerce, include the expansion of transportation infrastructure and the founding of MOTRAN, the recruitment of commercial air service to the Permian Basin, the passage of the Economic Development Tax leading to the creation of the Midland Development Corporation, and the forming of organizations such as Permian Basin Petroleum Association, United Way of Midland, Keep Midland Beautiful, Midland Memorial Hospital and Foundation, and Midland College. Quote, "The Midland Chamber has always been there to address the needs of our community," remarked Evan Thomas, current COO and incoming president and CEO. Quote, "We are excited to enter our second century and train our focus and energy on tackling the challenges to come," end quote. The evening was also a time to honor Burns for his many years of service to the Chamber, his three terms as mayor, and decades of community service. Quote, "It's been the privilege of a lifetime to lead this chamber for the past 12 years and work on behalf of Midland," Burns said. "It's seen much change and growth, and I am proud to leave it in Evan's capable hands," end quote. Congressman August Pfluger, State Senator Kevin Sparks, Speaker Tom Craddock, and Midland Mayor Lori Blong each presented proclamations dedicated to Burns, noting his passion for mentoring emerging leaders, persistence, and love for Midland. The evening ended with a toast to the Chamber's next 100 years and a successful future for Burns in his retirement. The next celebration will be the annual State of Oil and Gas Luncheon to be held at the Bush Convention Center on January 23rd, the 100th birthday of the Chamber. Tickets and sponsorship can be purchased at midland.biz. Energy industry enters holding pattern. Survey finds limited business activity growth from third to fourth quarter. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Texas's energy industry entered a holding pattern in the fourth quarter, according to the quarterly Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas Energy Survey released Wednesday. Kunal Patel, senior business economist with the bank, said during a video call with media that the key takeaway from responses received from 144 energy firms was that there was limited business activity growth from the third quarter to the fourth quarter. Responses also indicated a sharp drop in the company outlook index, which sank over 40 points to a negative 12.4 from a positive 36 in the third quarter. At the same time, uncertainty jumped to 46.1 from 6.8 in the previous quarter. Patel attributed those results in large part to commodity price, when oil prices fell from an average over $80 in the third quarter to around $70 in the third. He noted the weakness in natural gas prices, which he said is unusual in winter when demand is usually highest. Quote, one comment said the key question is OPEC's ability to keep prices up. If they can keep their resolve in keeping prices up, he said. The record run of Permian Basin mergers and acquisitions, dominated by ExxonMobil's $64 billion acquisition of Pioneer Natural Resources and Occidental Petroleum's $12 billion purchase of Crown Rock, also added to participants' concerns. An overwhelming majority, 77%, expect additional very large acquisitions over the next 2 years. Respondents from the oil field service sector commented that the consolidation will impede growth and sustainability in the services sector and has already had a direct impact on the rig count and need for services. Quote, as exploration and production companies consolidate, they have more supplier power, so they can negotiate lower rates that could hurt service companies. Larger companies have increased negotiating power and economies of scale, explained Patel. The survey also found employment was little changed from the third quarter amid a sharp decline in the rig count and a slight decline in the number of fracturing crews. Quote, the industry has been incredibly lean and employment is nowhere near where it was in 2019, he said. He attributed that in part to steep gains in efficiencies that have yielded record oil and natural gas production with fewer rigs, as well as commodity cycles that have affected employment. There's also the perception among potential oil and gas professionals that the energy transition could mean limited opportunities. Looking to 2024, respondents largely do not expect capital spending to increase significantly from 2023 levels, with 33% predicting a slight increase and 26% expecting spending to remain close to 2023 levels. A majority of companies are predicting their budgets on oil prices between $70 and $80 a barrel. Oil production continued in the fourth quarter, though the pace slowed sharply from the third quarter. Patel said he expects that trend to continue, continued production growth, but at significantly lower levels. Responses revealed a divergence between small E&P companies, those producing less than 10,000 barrels a day, and large E&P companies that produce more than 10,000 barrels a day. A majority of respondents from smaller companies say their primary goal in 2024 is to grow production, while respondents from larger companies say their primary goal is to acquire assets or reduce debt levels. Shale bosses brace for more oil megadeals. The story was written by David Waith from Bloomberg. Shale bosses are bracing for more megadeals in the U.S. oil industry, and some fear the consequences of consolidation. Executives predict more monster acquisitions after Chevron Corporation's $53 billion takeover of Hess Corporation and ExxonMobil Corporation's purchase of Pioneer Natural Resources Company for $59.5 billion in October, according to a quarterly survey by the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. For the companies that provide crews and equipment to oil producers, that's not good news. Quote, the consolidation of operators will impede the growth and sustainability of the oil field service sector, an unidentified respondent said in the report. This will lead to the demise of small independent oil and gas operators, as they will be unable to obtain reasonable pricing from the few remaining service providers, end quote. Oil prices will probably close 2024 at $78 a barrel, survey respondent said. That's $10 less than the prediction for year-end 2023 in last quarter's report. The market has been plagued by skepticism that OPEC Plus will adhere to production cuts and concerns that supplies from the U.S. are rising, though escalating geopolitical risks have recently introduced a premium. The Dallas Fed survey is widely read for its anonymous comments that offer an unfiltered view on a range of industry topics, from the White House to the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. Executives were divided on strategy for next year. Many respondents from larger exploration companies said they plan to acquire assets, while those from smaller firms said they want to grow or maintain production. Quote, the policies of the administration continue to present significant headwinds, especially for smaller independents, one respondent said. Access to capital is constrained for small projects less than $50 million in size, end quote. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, December 21st. Narni Reinhardt Buchanan was born April 15, 1932, in Garden Valley, Texas. She had been a resident of Midland for 11 years, formerly living in Mount Sylvan. She graduated from Van High School and attended Tyler Junior College. She was a member of Lindale Garden Club. Mrs. Buchanan enjoyed both growing and arranging flowers. She owned and worked at the Lindale Floral Shop for many years. Narni married James F. Sonny Buchanan in 1956 in Van, Texas. They made their home in East Texas until Sonny's death in 2011. Shortly after, Narni moved to Midland, where she enjoyed her life at the village at Manor Park, but her heart always belonged in East Texas. Narni passed away at the age of 91 on December 18th in Midland. She was preceded in death by her husband, James F. Sonny Buchanan, her parents, Zeb and Bessie Reinhardt, siblings, Joyce Bax, Z.V. Reinhardt, Eugene Reinhardt, Keith Reinhardt, and Mary Frances Ellison DuBose, two nephews and two nieces. Survivors include her two daughters and sons-in-law, Kay and Tom Zeltman of Midland, and Kathy and Mark Benny of College Station, and a grandson, Douglas Zeltman, and wife Valerie of Colorado. A graveside service will be held for Mrs. Buchanan at 1 p.m. on Friday, December 22nd at Mount Sylvan Cemetery under the direction of Hilliard Funeral Home in Van, Texas. A reception will follow at Mount Sylvan Baptist Church. If desired, memorials may be made to Hospice of Midland or Mount Sylvan Baptist Church. Jimmy Dale Grisham, known to friends as Jim, passed away on November 10th in Wylie, Texas. He was 87 years old. He was born in 1936 in Quanah, Texas, to Marvin and Ruby Grisham. In 1958, he moved to Fort Benning, Georgia, where he enlisted in the Army. At Fort Benning, he met Barbara Ann French. They were married in 1960. They lived most of their married life in Odessa, where they raised their children. Jim was a successful salesman for State Chemical Company for 25 years, and then for Mayfield Paper Company for 26 years. They moved to Germantown, Tennessee in 2013 to be closer to family. Jim is preceded in death by his parents and his younger brother, Thomas Grisham. He is survived by a daughter, Gwen, and Steve Lovelace of Collierville, Tennessee, his son, Stephen, and his wife, Char, of El Dorado, Kansas, his brother, Kenneth and Shirley, of Albuquerque, New Mexico, as well as 6 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren. There will be a memorial service on January 13th at 10 a.m. at Charles W. Smith and Sons Funeral Home in Sauk, Texas. Juanita Avalos, beloved wife, mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother, passed away on December 19th. Juanita was born on November 15, 1936, in Robstown, Texas, to Trinidad Rubio Sr. and Petra Tanguma. Juanita met the love of her life, Pedro, in Stanton, Texas. Their 40 years of marriage were filled with love, laughter, and countless cherished memories with each other and their children. Juanita worked at Stanton ISD for many years and retired in the year 2000. She took pride in her work and formed lasting bonds with her co-workers and students. Juanita is preceded in death by her husband Pedro Avalos Sr., daughters Jesus Valenzuela, Linda Salcido, Margie Dominguez, Janie Martinez, granddaughter Cynthia Martinez, parents Trinidad and Petra Rubio Sr., brothers Frank Rubio, Trinidad Rubio Jr., sisters Amelia Rubio and Emilia Oguin. She is survived by her son, Pedro Pete Avalos Jr., and wife Kathy, daughter Anita Avalos Sanchez, and husband Oscar, brother Juan Rubio, sisters Teresa Booth, Lupe Mendoza, Valentina Casares, grandchildren Pete Dominguez, Paul Dominguez, Danny Dominguez, Jennifer Bender, Donna Martinez, Christopher Chris Avalos, Brianna Avalos, Sarah Walker, Francisco Frankie Sanchez, as well as 17 great-grandchildren. A visitation will be held Thursday, December 21st from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. with a rosary starting at 7 p.m. at Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. on Friday, December 22nd at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Interment will follow at St. Joseph's Catholic Cemetery. In remembrance of Juanita's life, the family is asking, in lieu of flowers, to consider a donation to a charity of your choice. The family would like to express their sincere gratitude to Midland Medical Lodge and Interim Hospice for their loving care of Juanita. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at www.stantonfh.com. Kathy A. Gibson of Midland passed away on December 15th in Midland. A celebration of her life and legacy will be held at Christ Church Anglican, 5501 North Midkiff in Midland, on December 21st at 11 a.m. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, January 2nd. UTPB Professor Penn's Children's Book. University of Texas Permian Basin Associate Professor of Literacy, Tara Wilson, doesn't just teach her subject, she's taking action. Wilson recently published her first book, a children's book called Randy Rattlesnake. It is illustrated by Nina Nikoyani and published by Innovative Incorporated. I have always wanted to write a children's book. It's kind of been on my bucket list, and so I finally chose the opportunity to start writing a children's book, Wilson said. She went with Randy Rattlesnake because she wanted the book to be different, with a cute, friendly rattlesnake. It also has ties to West Texas and the oil and gas industry. The book talks about the industry in terms a second grader and someone who doesn't know much about the industry can understand. Randy also has his own Facebook page. I've learned a lot, and there are people out in the industry that have helped me. With Randy Rattlesnake, it talks about Randy, who is a landowner. A landman approaches him about drilling on his land. They go through that process in the book, Wilson said. She plans to pen another Randy Rattlesnake book. This one ends with a construction engineer coming to set up on Randy's property, ready to start drilling. Book two will pick up from there about the drilling process. I don't know how many books there's going to be. I do want it to be a series, but I have no clue because I don't know what's all involved. A children's book can only be so long, you know. We don't want it to be too long. I hope I'm able to finish the whole process. In each book, my goal is to also have two or three jobs explained. In book one, it is explained what a landman does, construction engineer, and a drilling engineer. So those three jobs are explained in book one. I don't know which jobs will be explained in book two, Wilson said. She added that she has gotten a lot of help from people and companies in the industry who have helped her understand how things work and explain them in a way that lay people can understand. Wilson said she hopes to have the next book out by March or April. It seems people like the book because I was kind of worried about it, so we're going to go with number two, she said. She noted that there are tons of other oil and gas jobs, but she wouldn't be able to include them in the book because there's only so much room. I'm going to keep it short and simple and explain the overall process and highlight some of the jobs in the oil and gas field. Randy Rattlesnake is going to be the only animal, Wilson said. She named the landman Wayne Williams. He's a human. Everybody's a human except for Randy and his family, who are friendly rattlesnakes, she stressed. The book is available from the publisher's website, Amazon, Barnes & Noble online, and Walmart online. She hopes to do some local businesses and ask them if they would like to buy a few copies and sell it. I've had some schools ask me if I would come read it, so I'm going to go after Christmas. So that's really exciting, Wilson said. Wilson, who is from Houston, has had schools from the area who want her to come and read her book as well. She said writing the book wasn't too hard because she had the idea already. What she is worried about is whether people are going to like her book or have any problem with it. But she realizes that there are going to be critics out there. But writing it, I actually had a lot of fun because it was a learning process, and working with an illustrator was fun and interesting, Wilson said. She added that she has read a lot of children's books all of her life, and she has quite a few in her office and at home. Wilson uses children's books she has to teach classes. She also sets aside time to read the books out loud. I used to be a kindergarten teacher before becoming a college professor, so that's something I've always done, but I did look through some more with a different lens, looking at style and artwork. I've always read a lot of children's books. I still do. I did go back and look at some to get some ideas on it, Wilson said. New Year's Eve sweeps across the globe, but wars cast a shadow on 2024. New Year's Day arrived to cheers from thousands in New York's Times Square, where a sparkling crystal ball descended to start 2024, with hope for some, even as the world's ongoing conflicts subdued celebrations and raised security concerns across the globe. It's beautiful, Corin Christian of Charlotte, North Carolina, said of the scene, seconds past midnight, as Frank Sinatra's New York, New York blared from the speakers in the square, and many in the crowd held cell phones in the air trying to capture the spectacle. It's going very well so far, said Jacob Erickson of Salt Lake City, Utah, with the earliest assessment of the new year. The march of midnight from time zone to time zone brought 2024 first to places like Australia, where more than 1 million people watched a pyrotechnic display centered around Sydney's famous Opera House and Harbour Bridge, a number of spectators equivalent to 1 in 5 of the city's residents. It would be another 16 hours before New York finished 2023. There were snapshots of joy from country to country as the new year was welcomed with optimism that its days will bring more joy than sorrow. Before midnight arrived in Times Square, December Lee, 26, and Shadia Lawrence, 25, of Columbus, Ohio, said their New York visit highlighted 4 years of traveling the globe. Also in Times Square, Terrell Jacobs, 27, and Sarah Creighton, 26, arrived from New Orleans 15 hours before midnight and got engaged in streets packed with tens of thousands of people, counting first the hours and then the minutes until midnight. It's definitely a must-see, Creighton said, of the colorful cast of strangers nearby in tall hats and blowing noisemakers even before the ball dropped. It's at least go once, you know, just to experience the magic. A small army of thousands of police officers worked to keep New York City safe, just as heightened security had done in the city's midnight hit first. New York has seen nearly daily protests sparked by the Israel-Hamas war. Some 90,000 police and security officers were deployed around France, including along Champs-Élysées Avenue, where large crowds took in a multidimensional light show projected onto the Arc de Triomphe, showcasing the history of Paris and sports on the menu for next year's Summer Olympics in the city. While New Year's Eve concerts were plentiful across America on Sunday night, CNN news personality Anderson Cooper followed a tribute to entertainers who died in 2023 by acknowledging the network's jovial New Year's Eve program with co-host Andy Cohen, who also had a sad occasion might also be a sad occasion for some viewers. There's a lot of people who feel like they can't celebrate, he said in the final minutes of a year, that claim the lives of Tina Turner, Tony Bennett, Harry Belafonte, Sinead O'Connor, Jimmy Buffett, Burke Bacharach, and David Crosby, among others. Fireworks lights up the night. Stunning fireworks displays boomed at iconic locations like the Acropolis in Athens, Greece, reflected in the sleek glass walls of the world's tallest building, the Burj Khalifa in Dubai and the United Arab Emirates, and accompanied a collective cheer filling the air in Nairobi, Kenya. China celebrated relatively quietly, with most major cities banning fireworks over safety and pollution concerns. Still, people gathered and performers danced in colorful costumes in Beijing, while a crowd released wish balloons in Chongqing during his New Year address. President Xi Jinping said the country would focus on building momentum for economic recovery in 2024 and pledged China would surely be unified with Taiwan. In Taipei, Taiwan's capital, the mood was upbeat as revelers gathered for a fireworks show at the bamboo-shaped Taipei 101 skyscraper and at concerts and other events citywide. In India, thousands of revelers from the financial hub of Mumbai watched the sun set over the Arabian Sea. Fireworks at New Delhi raised concerns that the capital, already infamous for its poor air quality, would be blanketed by a toxic haze on the first morning of the new year. Across Japan, people gathered at temples such as the temple in Tokyo, where visitors were given free hot milk and corn syrup as they stood in line to strike a massive bell. About 2 million people gathered at Rio de Janeiro's Copacabana Beach under light drizzle to watch 12 minutes of fireworks in one of the world's most popular locations for New Year's Eve. Pope highlights the human cost of war. At the Vatican, Pope Francis recalled 2023 as a year marked by wartime suffering. During his traditional Sunday blessing from a window overlooking St. Peter's Square, he offered prayers for the tormented Ukrainian people and the Palestinian and Israeli populations, the Sudanese people, and many others. At the end of the year, we will have the courage to ask ourselves, how many human lives have been shattered by armed conflict? How many dead and how much destruction? How much suffering? How much poverty? The pontiff said. Gaza and Ukraine wars grind on. In Russia, the country's military actions in Ukraine overshadowed end-of-year celebrations, with the usual fireworks and concert in Moscow's Red Square canceled, as they were last year. Even without the festivities, people gathered in the square and some cheered and pointed their phones at a clock counting down the year's final seconds. After shelling in the Russian border city of Belgorod, killing 24 people, some local authorities across the country have canceled their fireworks displays, including Vladivostok. Millions were expected to tune in to President Vladimir Putin's New Year's pre-recorded address, in which he said no force could divide Russians and stop the country's development. Israeli strikes in the Gaza Strip killed at least 35 people Sunday, hospital officials said, as fighting raged across the tiny enclave a day after Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu resisted international calls for a ceasefire, said the war will continue for many more months. Skyscrapers in Tel Aviv were lit up in yellow to call for the release of hostages held by Palestinian militants in Gaza for more than 80 days. While you are counting down until the new year, our time and our lives stopped, said Moran Belzer Tayar, the aunt of Yegev Buchstab, a 34-year-old hostage. In the Gaza Strip, displaced Palestinians huddled around a fire in a makeshift refugee camp. From the intensity of the pain we live, we do not feel that there is a new year, said Kamal E. Zin Tay, who has lost multiple family members in the conflict. All the days are the same. In Iraq, a Christmas tree was decorated with Palestinian flags and symbolic bodies in funeral shrouds, placed beside a Liberty Monument in central Baghdad. Many Christians in Iraq have canceled this year's festivities in solidarity with Gaza and have chosen to limit their celebrations to prayer and rituals. We hope that the new year, 2024, will be a year of goodness, prosperity, and joy, said Ahmed Ali, a Baghdad resident. In Muslim-majority Pakistan, the government banned all New Year's Eve celebrations in solidarity with the Palestinians. Global tensions spur security vigilance. New York Mayor Eric Adams said there were no specific threats to his city's annual bash. Nevertheless, police said they expanded the security perimeter around the party, creating a buffer zone to allow them to head off potential demonstrations. On New Year's Eve 2022, a machete-wielding man attacked three police officers a few blocks from Times Square. The Las Vegas Strip was closed to vehicle traffic, and there was a heavy law enforcement presence with armed officers lining the strip as thousands of revelers gathered and street musicians played before midnight when fireworks launched simultaneously with multiple casinos. the city of Las Vegas said more than 400,000 people were expected at the celebration. German authorities said they detained three more people in connection with a reported threat of a New Year's Eve attack by Islamic extremists on the world-famous Cologne Cathedral. In Berlin, about 4,500 police officers worked to keep order and avoid riots like those seen a year ago. They also banned a pro-Palestinian protest on the Neukölln neighborhood of the German capital, which had seen several pro-Palestinian riots. New trash trucks on the way in Odessa. The city of Odessa is currently paying for a decision to be penny-wise, not only monetarily, but when it comes to providing essential garbage services, said city manager John Beckmeyer. Odessans are only getting their trash picked up once a week instead of the normal twice a week. Because 18 out of 38 trucks are currently out of service, according to records obtained by the Odessa American through the Texas Public Information Act. I believe that people wanted to look like they were saving money, and instead of replacing trucks at the end of their useful, true life, they extended it out, and now we have trouble providing services, Beckmeyer said. It looks good for the short term, but in the long end, it ends up costing the city more. It was penny-wise and pound-foolish. It's defeating. It's not smart. Some years ago, Beckmeyer said, garbage trucks were replaced every 4 to 5 years, and the decision was made to extend that time period to 8 to 9 years, and now those trucks are breaking down. The biggest problem right now is finding power takeoffs for the trucks, which control things like the door and the tilt function, Beckmeyer said. In fact, Beckmeyer said some drivers are also going without air conditioning last summer when temperatures were well over 100 degrees. Equipment Services Director Chris Adams has been trying to find the necessary parts to fix the issues, but there's a nationwide shortage, Beckmeyer said. According to records obtained by the OA, as of December 1st, one truck was waiting on a vendor to rebuild a hydraulic pump because no new or already built pumps were available nationwide. At the same time, another three trucks were waiting on parts, four trucks were waiting to be diagnosed, and two other trucks were waiting on a dealer or vendor to repair. The good news is Chris found trucks that have more common parts, which are easier to get, and will put them back on the 4 to 5 year life expectancy, Beckmeyer said. The city has ordered one roll-off for $225,000 and seven side loaders for $316,000 apiece, or roughly $2.2 million, said city spokeswoman Monica McDaniel. We are expecting them at various times during the first quarter. Once they arrive, we should have them in service within 7 to 10 days, McDaniel said. Beckmeyer said the new trucks are already figured into the FY23-24 budget. Knowing that with the holidays, residents' trash bins will be overflowing, Beckmeyer said the city set up open-top containers in all 5 city districts. McDaniel said Jathan S. Contrias, solid waste operations manager, explained the locations were chosen based on the curbside roll-out cart service areas and easiest access locations in each district. Kate's planning ahead for the unexpected. The new year is a time where many people think about the future. I have never been much of a New Year's resolution person, but this year I am thinking more about the things I need to get done in the near future. I think that is because of my father. My dad became a widower the second time a few years ago and decided in the next few months he needs to move on to the next stage in his life. He wants to move to a smaller home with less upkeep and closer to his kids, my brothers and me. Because of that, over the holidays, we started planning. House hunting, downsizing with furniture, and putting his house on the market were just a few of the things we started working on. As we were talking about all the things that needed to be done, we also started talking about some of the legal aspects of the changes in his life since he is moving to a different state. It started me thinking about how we all need to plan on the unexpected when it comes to healthcare decisions with the legal aspects and talking to our families about them. One of the best things my mom did for us as a family before she passed away was to let us know exactly what she wanted when it came to end-of-life decisions. When she was no longer able to make decisions for herself, we never had to guess what she wanted. During the course of my career, I have seen so many families agonize over end-of-life decisions. I have seen some families become irreparably damaged because they cannot come to an agreement on what their loved ones wanted done at the end of their life. I know end-of-life conversations can be extremely difficult, but if you get into a situation where you cannot speak for yourself, that conversation will save your loved ones a great deal of pain when they are asked to make them. The other thing to think about with end-of-life care is the medical professionals in a life-or-death situation. Every second counts. That means unless they are told upfront immediately on arrival that what your wishes are, they have to start life-saving efforts, even if that's not what you want. Having those conversations ahead of time with your loved ones can avoid that issue as well. Equally important to the family discussion about end-of-life decisions is having legal documentation to support your decision. This will make sure that your healthcare providers know your decisions when there is no one else available. You can give copies of those documents to your primary healthcare provider, your preferred hospital, and any other members of your healthcare team so they know your wishes in advance of any emergency. The legal documents for end-of-life care and decision-making when you cannot make those decisions for yourself fall into a group of documents called advanced directives. You can consult an attorney to help you with those documents, or the Texas Health and Human Services Commission has several advanced directive forms that you can download for free on their website at www.hhs.texas.gov/form/advance-directives. The website also has how to fill out the forms and how to have them legally witnessed. There are several advanced directive forms you can use. First is a declaration for mental health treatment, DMHT. That form allows you to make decisions about mental health care, including psychoactive medications, convulsive therapies, and emergency mental health treatment. This form is only used if a court of law believes you are incapable of making treatment decisions. If you are capable, you will be asked to make those decisions at the time for yourself. Second is the directive of physicians and family or surrogates. This is the form that helps you communicate your medical treatment when you are not able to make those decisions for yourself. This primarily applies to end-of-life decisions, but can also be used in any situation where you might not be able to make decisions for yourself, such as a coma from illness or injury. The next is medical power of attorney, MPOA. This form designates a specific person to make decisions on your behalf when it comes to health care and treatment when you cannot make those decisions for yourself. An MPOA does not give any financial power of attorney. It also does not go into effect until you cannot make decisions for yourself. The fourth form is an out-of-hospital, do-not-resuscitate, OOH-DNR form. This form instructs EMS providers and other healthcare professionals to not resuscitate you in the event of a cardiac arrest. This does not affect any other aspect of emergency care or comfort care. The final form is a statutory durable power of attorney, SDPOA. This is the form that designates someone to manage your property should you not be able to make decisions for yourself. An SDPOA does not allow that person to make healthcare decisions. If you have not had end-of-life decisions with your family and do not have any or all of the various advanced directives in place, I strongly encourage you to do so. This is not an old person issue. Anyone can use could be faced with making or having decisions made with us because of the unexpected. Please consider adding your family discussions and advanced directives to your plans this year. I hope and pray you will not have to use them, but this is the one area where it's a very good idea to plan ahead. I hope you and yours have a safe and happy new year. Self-care for a successful new year. Family features. Resolving to commit to better self-care can happen any time of the year, but there's something about the calendar flipping to a new year that signals a fresh start. It's the perfect starting point for new habits and a new approach to protecting your overall wellness. Self-care takes many forms. Maintaining a well-balanced diet and getting plenty of exercise are some ways to promote your physical health. So is taking good care of your body's largest organ, your skin. When it comes to mental health, getting organized is a surprisingly effective way to manage stress and keep your goals on track so you feel a sense of accomplishment. Start working toward a new year when your wellness is front and center with these ideas for simplifying and personalizing your journey. Look for more lifestyle advice and helpful wellness tips at elivingtoday.com. Prepare for healthier eating habits. Portion control is a common challenge when you kick off a healthier eating plan. One way to keep your meals on the modest size is preparing them ahead of time. Meal prep containers make it easy to have freshly prepared foods in moderate portions ready whenever you're ready to eat. Look for compartments that let you enjoy a main dish and at least one side, and to be sure the containers will seal tightly to keep food fresh and prevent leaks. Add whole grains with ease and convenience. Eating whole grains has never been this easy or tasty. Convenient and ready in just 10 minutes. Minute rices, instant brown rice, and rice and quinoa are must-haves for busy families. For those in need of an on-the-go option, minute rice cups, including brown rice, brown and wild rice, brown rice and quinoa, multigrain medley, and jasmine rice and red quinoa are ready in just 60 seconds. Start the year off right and discover more time-saving solutions at MinuteRice.com. Put your best foot forward. If stepping up your fitness game is part of your plan for 2024, be sure to start on the right foot with the right footwear for the job. Runners in particular should be conscious of quality shoes. Look for ample cushion, comfortable ankle support, overall quality construction, and a snug fit that gives your toes some wiggle room. Even slight variations can affect your comfort, so trying on different options is likely your best path forward finding the perfect fit. Introduce weights to your workout. Whether you've hit a plateau or you're just bored with your workout, adding dumbbells can introduce a whole new dimension to helping build muscle and burn fat. Rotating muscle groups lets you give your muscles a chance to recover between workouts. The options are nearly endless, so think about how you'll use them, where you'll store them, whether shape or color matters, and how much you want to spend. Make skin care a personal priority. Your skin tells an important story about your overall health. Protecting it from harsh elements and sun damage can help ensure your skin stays supple and strong, providing the barrier it's meant to as it protects the rest of your body. Even seemingly minor irritations like dry skin can be problematic, as scratching or cracking can lead to wounds and infection. Rely on a regular moisturizer and be conscious of applying sunscreen whenever you're outdoors. Plan for success in the new year. Give yourself a boost toward tackling this year's goals by getting organized. A planner can help you keep important information at your fingertips, while making it easy to keep tabs on appointments, deadlines, and more. You can even track progress against new habits or journal your way toward a healthier diet. Some people prefer physical planners they can write in and update manually, while others find a digital version in a smart device is more convenient. Vatican to publish never-before-seen homilies by Pope Benedict XVI during his 10-year retirement. The Vatican this year will publish a collection of never-before-seen homilies delivered by the late Pope Benedict XVI during his private Sunday Masses, most of them penned during his 10-year retirement, officials said recently. The consecrated women who tended to Benedict during his pontificate and retirement recorded the homilies as he delivered them and have now transcribed them for publication by the Vatican's publishing house. 30 of the homilies date from Benedict's pontificate, while around 100 more are from his retirement, said a statement from the publisher, the Joseph Ratzinger Foundation, and the Vatican's communications office. All are in Italian, the German-born theologian's adopted language. The Vatican newspaper Les Observatori Romano, in conjunction with Germany's Welt am Sonntag, published the first of the homilies Saturday. It is a meditation on the figure of Joseph that Benedict delivered on December 22, 2013, just a few months before he became the first pope in 600 years to resign. Benedict died on December 31, 2022, at the age of 95. His longtime spokesman, the Reverend Federico Lombardi, who heads the Ratzinger Foundation, is curating the collection. Organizers of the project said the homilies don't contain any news or theological novelties, but are rather substantial spiritual nutrition. West Texas VA to hold Veteran Town Hall to provide updates and engage with veterans. Leadership of the West Texas VA healthcare system will continue the organization's conversation about VA healthcare system operations, access, quality, and timeliness with an open forum from 5 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. Thursday, January 11th at VFW Post 6873, 1049 Veterans Drive, Abilene. This is an opportunity for veterans, family members, and other stakeholders to hear updates, ask questions, express concerns, and share ideas. Town hall meetings provide a great opportunity for VA leaders to hear directly from veterans about challenges and issues they see so that we can make changes to serve them better, said West Texas VA Health Care System Director Keith Bass in a news release. These events also allow us to communicate about VA healthcare programs, services, and other benefits veterans have earned. Veterans and family members who are not able to stop by this event may also provide feedback via email at wtxvapublicaffairs@va.gov. Obituaries. Johnny Wayne Whitley passed away November 23rd. He was born February 29, 1952. Memorial service will be January 6th, 11 a.m. at Crossroads Church Chapel. Amelia Valdez Millie Pena, 75 of Houston, died Thursday, December 28th. Celebration of Life will be held at 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Wednesday, January 3rd at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Funeral service will be at a date and time to be announced in Wharton, Texas. Marilyn Matthews, 83 of Midland, passed away December 26th. She was born on September 19, 1940, in Calgary. Service will be January 6th at 2 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Midland. Guadalupe Derez Lupe Gonzalez, 86, of Odessa, died Wednesday, December 23rd, in Odessa. Celebration of Life will be held at 2 p.m. December 30th and was held 2 p.m. December 30th at the home of Leticia and Brian Rinke. Milton Drake, 81, of Odessa, died Tuesday, December 19th, in Midland. Graveside service was held at 2 p.m. December 30th in Santa Ana Cemetery Pavilion. Tammy Sue Craig, no services have been scheduled for Sammy Sue Craig, 57, of Odessa, who died Friday, December 22nd in Odessa. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Sherry M. Umstadt passed away the evening of December 20th after a long spell of health issues. The family wishes to thank those who helped in Sherry's life. Catherine Janet Fentress, 74, entered the presence of our Lord on Thursday, November 16th in Odessa. The celebration of life was held 10 a.m. Saturday, December 30th at Stonegate Odessa Church. Wanda Frances Rusty Ludwell passed away peacefully from this life to meet her Savior on December 26th. Service will be January 13th at 10:30 a.m. at Emmanuel Baptist Church.
Here is the Dear Abbey column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, December 21st. Elderly mother considers helping out her daughter. Dear Abbey, how can I help my financially drowning 57-year-old daughter without being pulled under myself? I live comfortably now, but that could change in an instant with a stroke or a fall and the need for assisted living. My daughter had been employed throughout her adult life, but was recently part of a group layoff. She has failed to find another job in her field, and her benefits have run out. I don't blame her for the job loss, but I do think she could have been earning some money by working part-time. She didn't do that until the benefit well had run dry. I loaned her some money, but have made it clear that it will be short-lived. She hasn't asked for my opinion, but, boy, do I ever want to give it. She would have had a nice financial cushion had she not blown a $300,000 inheritance some years back. I feel guilty going out to lunch with friends or buying something unnecessary for the house when she's close to being homeless. My house is large enough for my daughter to live here, but she has I don't know how many dogs. She hides the number. Am I awful for living my life well while she flounders? Is there any help for her? Signed, Mean Mom in Texas. Dear Mom, at 57, your daughter is an adult. She, not you, is responsible for the poor choices she has made, including blowing her inheritance and not immediately looking to add to her benefits before they ran out. You are not awful for living your life, so stop flagellating. Tell your daughter she may need to find a job that pays less than the one she lost. This is a fact of life for many people. And if she needs to move in with you, draw the line at how many dogs she can bring with her and make the responsibility of finding safe homes for the rest hers. Dear Abby, I have been married 3 years. The man I married is not the person I fell in love with. After our wedding, he demanded that I take his last name. I am proud of my last name, and I didn't want to drop it. If only that were the sole problem. I am no longer allowed to go to lunch with my friends, or even to see my family unless it's on one particular day. Abby, my family means a lot to me, and my friends do too. I don't like being controlled. I have tried talking to him about it, but he blames everything on me. He is old-fashioned, so all my time needs to be here at home. I have children outside of this marriage, and my husband insists he comes first, no matter what. I do not feel that way. My children always come before anyone. How do I fix this? If I can't resolve it, it means divorce. I don't want that, but my children and my family matter, and I don't believe a couple must spend every second together. Please give me your advice. Signed, Controlled in Tennessee. Dear Controlled, your husband has made clear that things are his way or the highway. He isn't going to mellow. Please take the hint, contact a lawyer, and set yourself free. The alternative is to continue being treated like a hostage.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.